Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
And welcome back, everybody. As you can probably tell, this is not James Edwards. This is Bill Rowland taking over the controls from James just for this one very special interview that we have tonight with Dr. Tom Sell. Certainly one of the most compelling, one of the most heartbreaking stories we have ever covered on the political cesspool. And if you know anybody to call to listen to any show, this will be one you want to hear. Because Dr. Tom is truly an American political prisoner, a man who spent time in prison, we believe, mainly because of his beliefs and his attitudes and his opinions. Dr. Sell was a prominent dentist in St. Louis and a member of the Army Reserve, a major in the Army Reserve. And part of that story, why that's significant, will come up in a future episode, and you're not going to believe what you hear when you hear why it's so important to know that Dr. Tom Sell was a major in the Army Reserve. But let us all welcome Dr. Tom Sell. Dr. Tom, are you there?
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Welcome to the political cesspool. You don't know a real pleasure and honor it is for you to be on the show tonight. And we're just going to jump right into your story. As I've told the audience, you were a prominent, successful dentist in St. Louis, had a good practice, and suddenly one day you found yourself under the hammer of the federal government. Subjected to a terrible ordeal in your office, and obviously something that you would never have expected, and I don't think the people of St. Louis or your patients expected. But tell us about what happened to you that fateful day in your office while you had patients in the chair.
Well, yes, the FBI came storming into my office and handcuffed me, and right while I was in the middle of work one morning, and they proceeded to ransack the office and go through every one of my dental files and eventually carted them all out of the office, and then they took me to my house and ransacked through my whole house and took every record I had out of my house, and they even took my AR-15. And they said, we're going to leave, Kevin Costantino, one of the FBI agents, says, we're going to leave you your 9mm Beretta so that if you're smart, you'll commit suicide because of what you're going to end up going through. And then they just left in a big van full of all my property. And that was on April 17th, 1997.
Well, Dr. Sell, now what you said about this FBI agent sounds like something that would have happened in the Soviet Union. In other words, your best option is to commit suicide rather than face the wrath of the federal government. Now, we haven't mentioned what exactly you did to be subjected to this, to have, you know, FBI agents storm your office. Certainly, you were not a domestic terrorist. Certainly, you had not committed some heinous crime. You weren't involved in internet terrorism or in any violent crime of any kind. But we do know that you were pretty active, for instance, in the Council of Conservative Citizens, and pretty outspoken. And exactly what was the extent of your crime? What crime did you commit that was so horrible that the FBI had to come beat down your office doors and haul off all your records and subject you to this obvious abuse?
Well, at the time, they claimed that I was committing insurance fraud. But that was even unclear that day. I was scheduled in 2 weeks. I was in the Memphis, actually, there in that base in north of Memphis. Was it Millington?
Yes.
I was stationed there. That was my drill site, and we were getting ready to go on to Fort Benning, Georgia, and I was in charge of the convoy carrying the automatic weapons and what have you. And I was an NBC officer, nuclear, chemical, and biological, and I was a graduate of not only advanced officers training, but the Command and General Staff College, the prestigious Army Command and General Staff College. And I joined the Army Reserve back in 1983. I was listening to the radio in my office, and I heard Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was on the radio, and he was talking about the evil empire of the Soviet Union, and I was so impressed, I got in my car and drove straight to the nearest Army recruiting center and joined the Army Reserve. And I started my practice in 1976 at the age of 26 after I graduated from University of Missouri, Kansas City School of Dentistry. And I had built it up and built it up, and I was very successful. I was making a lot of money. I had this a lot of equipment, the state of the art, in a beautiful office at the intersection of the second busiest interstates in Missouri, Highway 40 and Highway 70. And my patients came from all over the whole area. And so they left me with no record, so I was really handicapped in my ability to practice then, and, of course, felt devastated. And then one day they wired my assistant on Friday, the 16th of May, and as I was leaving my office that day, they attacked me on the parking lot, maced me real bad, knocked me down, and held me at gunpoint and handcuffed me again. And they hurt me so bad with that mace, I couldn't breathe, so they had to take me to the emergency room at the hospital. Finally, they took me down to the courthouse downtown, the federal courthouse, and when I pulled into the Sally Port, the marshals were there and ordered the FBI agents to stand against the wall because they were so appalled at my condition. I was still in my scrubs from practicing dentistry that day, and they took me to a they arraigned me, took me to a county jail in East St. Louis, Belleville, which encompasses East St. Louis. That was on a Friday. And the following Tuesday, they hauled me in. Well, I figured they had this complaint, and I figured out from the initials who the patient was, and they said I didn't do these fillings. Well, I know I had done them, so I had his mother bring the kid in, and I thought it'd be so simple. I'd just show the judge, here, look in his mouth. These fillings are all in, the teeth, just like I said they were. Well, they didn't want to have anything to do with that. They wanted to prove that I was crazy.
Dr. Sell, we've got a break coming up. We'll be right back after the break. More of your fascinating story. I don't even have to ask questions because what you're telling us is so astounding. I will sort of do a little backup on the when we come back from break. But everybody, you're listening to The Political Cesspool. We're interviewing Dr. Tom Sell, a true American political prisoner. We'll be right back after these messages.
Are you new to freeze-drying foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. the sovereign newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten the free people to be knowledgeable with current, important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly, 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
And we're back on the air. Bill Rowland sitting in briefly for James Edwards for this particular interview with Dr. Tom Sell of St. Louis, a true American political prisoner. Now, in the first segment there, when we had Dr. Sell on, he was talking about his arrest in his dental office, his being assaulted in the parking lot of his dental office and maced, the ransacking of his home by the FBI, and his indictment, or his arraignment. Dr. Sell, now, when you were brought into court, what exactly were you, what was the arraignment about? What were the charges against you? I mean, for this massive, obviously.
The charges were supposed to be a few of these fillings, but they didn't even mention that. All the FBI talked about was that I belonged to what they claimed was Sons of the Confederacy, so I guess they thought it was Sons of Confederate Veterans. They claimed that I wore my army jacket over my scrubs, and that was a sign that I was crazy. Well, a lot of times I'd be coming back from drill, and I'd have some army clothes on, or I did a lot of night classes, and I wore my army jacket. And instead of dressing in a suit and tie, they said that was a sign of insanity. And things like that. My lawyer objected to the hearsay. It was all hearsay. Something like 17 times, and every one of those objections was overruled by the magistrate judge, Judge Marianne Medler. And
so,
then the prosecutor, when she objected, every one of her objections was sustained. So I knew right away this wasn't a fair hearing, and it was all hearsay. And so the judge said, well, I think you're incompetent to stand trial, so I'm sending you to Springfield, Missouri, for a competency evaluation. So then they took me to Franklin County Jail, and they threw me in the drunk tank, because I guess they thought I was crazy then. And so I'd kind of lay down on the floor and doze off, and every time I'd wake up, there'd be a whole new bunch of drunks in the tank with me. So I stayed there for a few days, and the marshals came and picked me up and drove me to Springfield, Illinois, and they started interrogating me. They said, what organizations do you belong to? And I said, well, I belong to the American Dental Association, the Missouri Dental Association, St. Louis Dental Society, and the Lions Club. And so they said, well, we think you're violent. Because I was pretty big and pumped up from working out, being in the Army so much, you know. So they threw me in solitary confinement. Well, after 3 weeks of solitary confinement, I didn't know whether I was coming or going, you know. And they hauled me out, and they said, you got to take this competency test. So I refused. And so the psychologist came and marched me into his office and started reading me the Riot Act, and I just said, I respectfully refuse to answer any questions, and I invoke my Fifth Amendment right to remain silent because I think anything I say might incriminate me in a court of law. And they said, you can't take the Fifth Amendment. I said, well, why not? They said, well, because this is a mental evaluation, medical. I said, well, the judge said I could take the Fifth Amendment. When they arrested me, they said I had the right to remain silent, and that's what I'm doing. So they didn't know what to do. I guess nobody had ever done that before, so they couldn't evaluate me. So they didn't know what to do, so I just spent the rest of my time taking a small engine repair class and hanging out on the yard, and eventually they sent me back. I stayed a month in a county jail back in that Franklin County jail, and then they moved me to Washington County Jail in Potosi, where there was no air conditioning, and it was just way overcrowded, and it was just totally hot, very hot that summer, like 100 degrees in there. Just sweltering. And I remember one time they had the blacks in the cell across the hall, and they had a black Muslim imam come in, or whatever you call him, and he was preaching that the white people were devils. So all the whites started going nuts about that. Finally, they released me on $100,000 bond. We had to put my house up for bond, and I went back to my practice under the condition that I would see a psychiatrist.
Still now, with me? Let me get this straight. At your arraignment...
Hello?
Yes, Dr. Sell, can you hear me?
I can't hear you.
Okay, Dr. Sell, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now.
Okay.
Is everything okay?
Everything's good. Let me ask you this. Now, so when you actually went before the arraignment, they didn't mention the charges they were bringing against you, even though they had dragged you out of your office, that they talked about you being a member of the Sons of Confederacy or the Sons of Confederate Veterans, and that you were a big guy, and so they thought you were dangerous.
Right.
I mean, how did it come about that they had this information, and why was it relevant? I mean, what was going on in their mind? It sounds like you were the only sane one in the courtroom, or for that matter, in the evaluation office. It sounds like you're the only sane person in the whole system.
Yeah, I know. It was very unusual and very unfair, I thought, but that's the way the federal government judicial system is. It's a very uneven playing field.
Well, now, if you had to guess, obviously these charges, I think I remember that your assistant in the office was actually an informant for the FBI? Or...
Yeah, they had her wired. So they were listening to everything that I said in the office.
And so was any of that evidence that from the wire ever brought up, or just her testimony, or just her accusations?
Well, they brought that up during this hearing that she was wired.
And but of course, you didn't know any of this. I mean, what possible conversation could have taken place that would have brought about this sort of massive intervention in your life? I mean, I understand that what was the total amount of money that they said that you had, they claimed you had defrauded either by insurance or through Medicare or Medicaid?
They never did say.
They never gave you a figure on what
no,
the amount
but
was
after
or why?
8 years, 7.5 or 8 years after all of this, the count that they finally said that I was guilty of involved about $25, $30.
$25 or $30, and for that, they raided your office and dragged you out and maced you, and all of these things happened to you. Obviously, there was an ulterior motive here. There was a second reason. any guesses as to what their real purpose for arresting you was, Dr. Sell?
Well, you know, I could only speculate that when I was in the Army Reserves, I was called up in April of 93, and it was very bizarre. My uniforms were didn't arrive when I arrived at Fort Sam Houston. So when I reported, that was on a Sunday, when I reported for duty on Monday, they said, well, you can't practice dentistry because you don't have your uniforms. So go to this office or go here. So while I was there, I was watching on the closed circuit TV, and I watched the FBI burn down the Waco compound. And I had was watching the Army's video of it, and I actually saw the tanks shoot flamethrowers into that compound.
Now, Dr. Sell, now we're getting to the root of your real persecution here. We've got a break coming up. Stay with us, Dr. Sell. Stay with us, audience. If you're not riveted to the radio right now, you have no soul, because this is the most incredible story you'll ever hear on this program. Right back after these messages, more with Dr. Tom Sell, a true American political prisoner.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who pleads the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. Your home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Are you looking for literature from authors who aren't ashamed of their European-American heritage? Are you looking for books that don't shy away from the forbidden facts? You used to look all over the internet for these books, but you can now find them all at the same place, lighthouseliterature.com. Whether you're looking for rare classics from the great thinkers or the latest and most popular books from guys like me, Lighthouse Literature is your trusted source for the best books at the best prices. For a limited time, you can get my new book, Racism Schmacism, from Lighthouse Literature for only $10. When you make a purchase from www.lighthouseliterature.com, you're helping support dedicated real-world advocates and activists. So, what are you waiting for? Surf on over to lighthouseliterature.com. A bright light for the right.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Yeah.
get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We've got to get out of this
place. And welcome back to the political cesspool. Bill Rowland sitting in for James Edwards in this last segment. And I am conducting absolutely the most riveting, the most compelling interview I've ever done on this show. And as I say, if you've missed the first half, you've missed a remarkable program. I'm here with Dr. Tom Sell, a prominent dentist from St. Louis, a major in the Army Reserve, who was subjected to political punishment by the United States government for a number of reasons, but certainly he was not arrested for the reasons that they claimed, which supposedly was Medicare, Medicaid, and insurance fraud, as Dr. Sell said, which amounted to a total of about $30 had those charges even been relevant. But Dr. Sell, you were talking about being at Waco as a dentist at the time that the Koresh compound was burned to the ground. Now, I'm going to ask that you hold off on that because we're going to cover that entire incident in a future installment, and we just don't have time tonight to give it justice. If it's okay, I'd like to go back to your arrest and what was going on in jail and what had happened subsequent to your visit to the psychologist and your refusal to take the competency test.
Okay, well, you know, I went from living like a king one day to being locked up in this little cell in solitary confinement in the next day. And I was cut off from all communications. I didn't know what was going on. And so the last thing I wanted to do at that point was be mentally evaluated. I thought, who are these people to yank me out of my life and put me here, and now they're going to start mentally evaluating me against my will. So I thought the best thing to do would be to take the fifth, because who knows how they would twist or distort whatever I said. And quite frankly, I didn't even know, what, like I said, whether I was coming or going at the time, because it was very traumatic.
Well, certainly we're opening some old wounds here on this show, I know. But I mean, it sounds like to me the perfectly sane thing to do would have been to take the fifth, considering that you weren't even apparently sure of what you were being charged with. At this point, had there been any discussion about, you know, what was going to be your options in court or what you should do or shouldn't do from your lawyer?
None whatsoever.
So you were just in limbo in the system, floating in
right.
The system behind
totally.
Bars, of course.
Right.
But without any real, it seems like, cause of action.
Well, yeah, well, then in August they had a hearing and everybody showed up, the psychiatrist and all that. Well, since I never said anything, they didn't have one bit of evidence to prove that I was, what my mental capacity was, so they couldn't say that I was mentally incompetent to stand trial. So they said I was competent to stand trial, and they eventually let me out on bond.
And
that
so you had to put
August,
your house
late August of 97.
And what was your wife going through at this time? I mean, obviously.
Oh, she was hysterical. I mean, she was trying to, you know, hold down the office and the house, and I was gone, and she didn't know what was going on with me, and it was really bad.
Were you allowed to see her? Did you have access?
No, I was in Springfield, Illinois. I mean, she couldn't drive all that way just to see me, and even if she did, I was in solitary confinement for some of the time. And when I was in the county jail, she could have come and see me, but still, that was way on the other side of the metropolitan area. So no, I got to talk to her on the phone now and then,
and that was it. Now, were they putting her under any pressure at this time to, you know, come forward or to try to get her to cooperate with which was what was obviously a frame-up? But was she at this point under any pressure to sort of betray you or to cooperate with the government?
Well, she was under pressure to fire my lawyer and hire a different lawyer and at the same time hire her own lawyer.
Her own lawyer?
Yeah.
I'm gonna let the cat out of the bag. Your wife also went to prison, is that right? Or she was also
later.
We're gonna get into that later. But I wanted the audience to know that she was not going to be excluded from the persecution. So she also was a political prisoner ultimately. But so you're involved in this. You're let out on bond. You go back to your practice. And are you at this point thinking that this whole thing may just go away? It may just disappear. It's a big mistake.
Well, I was hoping for that, but they told me if I would just plead guilty to one count of fraud, then they'd drop all the charges against my wife. But I didn't do that. I couldn't plead guilty to something I didn't do.
Exactly. So, but in other words, the point of that was to, I suppose, to establish you as a criminal, to get you in the system. And probably later on, you would have regretted that decision, I would think, almost certainly, to plead guilty, because it would seem to me that they would come back later with something else.
Well, but, I never did plead guilty. After 7.5 years, I never pled guilty.
Right, exactly. So, obviously, your family's in turmoil. Did your practice suffer at this point? Did you go back?
Well, I didn't have any dental records, but the patients still kept flocking in.
And you kept treating him, I'm sure. So at what point, now your life has sort of gone back to somewhat of a normal state, considering what you'd been through. What happened after that in regards to your, this government persecution?
Well, one of the conditions of my being out on bond was that I had to go see this psychiatrist who was way on the other end of town, an area that I would never go to, except I had to go up there 20 miles from where I lived to visit this doctor. And one day, on a Wednesday towards the end of January 1998, I went to see him. And the following Friday, they called me down to the courthouse. The probation officer said he wanted to talk to me. It was a rainy day. When I got there, I'd still practice dentistry that day. When I got there, they arrested me, and they said that I pointed my finger at that dental assistant who wore the wire when I was in that building. Well, I didn't know she worked there, first of all. Second of all, I never saw her that day. I just got in and out of the elevator, went to the doctor I was supposed to see, and she never saw me. I never saw her. At least I never saw her. I certainly didn't point my finger at her. And based on that, they revoked my bond and threw me back in jail. And they had a hearing on that. And it was just the FBI agent telling the judge what this lady had told her. And she never even showed up.
Now, let me get this straight.
Very strange the way they operated.
Are you telling this woman who had been wired by the FBI and put in your office to snitch you out just happens coincidentally and completely randomly happens to be in the same office building where you were undergoing these required visits to a psychiatrist or psychologist, that she's in the same building working the same time that you show up there?
Out of all the hundreds of office buildings in the St. Louis area, she just supposedly happens to be working in that office where the federal government was sending me to see a doctor.
And it just so happens that she felt menaced because she claimed that you pointed your finger at her.
Well, that's what the FBI said.
Right.
I never heard her side of the story.
And that's a reason to revoke your bail, your probation, is because you claim you pointed a finger at the snitch who happened to be in the office where you were getting undergoing your evaluation or whatever by a psychiatrist. And absolutely unbelievable.
Where they were sending me, on the other side of town.
On the other side of town, 20 miles away.
And right. They just happened.
So that doesn't sound like a setup to me, Dr. Sell.
That office when they knew I had to go there. Because 2 weeks later, I found out later when my lawyers investigated it, that she quit or she got fired or she acted so erratic they got rid of her.
Now, it's my understanding that she had actually either been convicted or had been charged with some sort of fraud herself. Is that right?
Oh, yes. She was under their control. What was it, honey? She was under investigation herself, but I didn't know that at the time.
Okay, Dr. Sell, we got a break. We'll be right back. Absolutely fascinating story of Dr. Tom Sell. If what you've heard so far hasn't got your jaw dragging on the ground, as I said, you have no soul. We'll be right back after these messages.
Are you looking for an affordable way to earn your bachelor's degree? Do you want a college experience that's more personal? Then discover your future at America's Transfer College. Students across the U.S. are choosing Ivy Bridge College as a better, smarter way to earn their degree. Thanks to Ivy Bridge's unique program, starting at a two-year college and transferring to finish your degree has never been easier. The program is simple. Start with Ivy Bridge College and take your first 2 years of college online. Transfer to one of over 140 of Ivy Bridge's partner schools and take your upper division courses. Then graduate with your bachelor's degree from the school of your choice. Personal attention, small class sizes, affordable tuition, and a clear pathway to graduation. Start your academic journey and contact us to learn more about Ivy Bridge College today. Call 877-622-2059 or visit americastransfercollege.com to find out more.
If you want to experience the great outdoors in comfort and style, then you need products from Teton Sports. For any of your camping, hiking, or outdoor needs, Teton Sports has top-of-the-line products for any adventure. Our sturdy and lightweight Wilderness 55 backpack has a built-in rain fly and plenty of compartments and pockets, perfect for hiking the mountains or a weekend camping trip. And our zero-degree sleeping bag features Superloft Elite 4-channel hollow fiber insulation for warmth, as well as right and left side zippers to let you zip two Teton bags together. With an adjustable mummy hood and interior storage pockets, our sleeping bags are the best on the market. Teton Sports is all you need for any outdoor adventure. Look for Teton Sports products at Amazon.com, Sportsman Warehouse, or Wholesale Sports. And next time you're preparing for an adventure, think of Teton Sports.
Are you new to freeze-drying foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
And welcome back to the political cesspool. If you've been listening, you have heard one of the best interviews we've ever had on this show with Dr. Tom Sell, a true American political prisoner, 8 years in prison, basically for simply being the object of persecution of the federal government. Certainly a man who was
either
insane. Well,
I can't remember what Janie was being charged with.
I'm sorry, Dr. Sell?
Yes.
Yeah, we're back on the air.
Okay.
You were asking your wife about something. The woman who had worked in your office, who had been wired to snitch you out to the FBI, as we said in the previous segment, was suddenly and mysteriously working in an office where you were undergoing required mental visits to a psychiatrist. And yeah. She just happened to be in the same building working, doing something. Yeah. And subsequently, she claimed that you pointed your finger at her, and that caused your bond to be revoked. So
that's exactly the way it happened.
And so you went back to jail. And what happened then?
Well, when we went to the courthouse to see the probation officer, this marshal came down and escorted me. He said there was a big mafia trial there or something. That's why he had to escort me up. And as soon as I got off the elevator, the FBI agents and the marshals just swarmed me and dragged me down to the jail holding cells and cut my ankle bracelet off. And it was a total lie to get me to go there. They said if I'd go there and talk to the probation officer, then they'd probably let me go to my army drill that weekend. Well, that was just a total lie to get me down there. And so they hauled me off in a paddy wagon to St. Genevieve County Jail, which is way south of St. Louis. And so the hearing then when they dragged me back up there was just, they said that I pointed my finger at her, which was totally untrue, but the judge didn't believe me. They just believed the FBI agents, of course. And so there I languished in jail there for a while, and then they moved me back to Potosi, to that jail in Potosi where I was before in Washington County. And I just stayed there and stayed there and stayed there. And then one day they came and took me out of Potosi and took me to Jennings City Jail in St. Louis. This was in February. And that was all black, but they had a few whites there. Well, that was a jail where they put confidential informers in the cell with you to make you say something so they could have your cellmate snitch you out and get information, you know? And when I got there, what they did, it was the same day that these supposedly Ku Klux Klan people tried to supposedly poison the water supply of East St. Louis. So while I was being transported there to that jail, they were showing this story on the news at noon, and all the blacks were sitting there in the day room watching TV. Well, they did, when they showed the pictures, the mug shots, they didn't show them. They showed my mug shot. So when I came walking in, strolling into that jail, I was basically attacked by 50 blacks. So there was a big to-do, and the guards came in and put all the blacks in their cells. So I grabbed some shoelaces and tied it into a little hangman's noose and went around to all the jail cells and riled them up real good even more. And then they came in and pushed me into a cell all by myself. Well, as time went on, I found out the whites came and they thought that I was their only hope because they hated it there so much. And so Tom Bugle came to visit me there. He was my mainstay. He was in the CFCC. The CFCC, through Gordon Baum and Tom Bugle, they were with me through this whole time. You know what I'm saying?
I gotcha.
I didn't really have it. All these other people I knew and associates and acquaintances and people didn't hear from them. I just, the people that took care of me were my people in the CFCC.
So the Council of Conservative Citizens came forward and actually stood behind you when nobody else would. Well, that's no surprise to me.
The whole time.
The people who are members of the council know that it's an organization with extraordinary integrity. But,
and they put money on my book so I could buy commissary and kept my hopes up. And I can't speak highly enough of them. I remember them in my prayers every night, thanking God for them and asking God to bless them.
Well, I do the same, Tom. I do the same. Now, let me get, once again, just going back and you were taken to jail again. You were put in a majority black jail, where you were sent into a room where they were showing some story about the Ku Klux Klan allegedly poisoning the water supply of St. Louis, which is absurd on the face of it. And then they put your picture up, your mugshot up,
yeah,
as part of the story about the Klan?
Yeah, because that's why they thought it was me when I walked in. I had no idea what they were talking about. And, of course, I had nothing to do with such a terrible plot. And anyway, after a few days, even the head blacks in that jail cell came to my jail cell, and they said, we figured out that wasn't you. You were just getting a bum deal from the feds. So even they all apologized to me, you know.
Well, that's amazing, considering even if these angry blacks saw that you were being set up and coming to your cell and saying, we realize what's going on, I think that speaks volumes about exactly what their intentions were. Do you suppose they were setting you up, hoping that maybe you wouldn't come out of that room alive?
Well, they were doing that to rattle my brain, because they sent in another confidential informant who had been a patient of mine and had just recently been arrested in a methamphetamine lab. So they got him to come and try and involve me in a plot to murder an FBI agent. And, of course, I said, no, I never said anything like that. I just wanted them to tell the truth, and I just wanted that dental assistant to tell the truth. So after that interview, the next day they moved me out of there. They took me back down to Potosi, and that was in February or March. And by April, they arrested my wife on conspiracy to murder, and they filed conspiracy to murder charges against me because, see, I don't think they felt they could hold me long enough on these dental fraud. They couldn't prove any dental fraud, so they brought up conspiracy to murder charges, which they could hold me for maybe 10 years on that, see?
Well, now we're getting to the crux. We're getting to the crux of this. The federal government was after you for some reason that had nothing to do with dental fraud, and they were determined to keep you locked up in jail till there was some way they could punish you enough to satisfy this grudge they had, obviously. And, I mean, it becomes increasingly apparent that this must have been some sort of political issue and not one of criminal justice.
So their main witness against me on this was a convicted perjurer who had been arrested and convicted of extortion before against a president of a labor union, the Iron Workers Union. And supposedly this entire thing boiled down to where my wife was supposed to give him $250 to have three or four FBI agents killed and a federal witness killed for $250. It was totally baloney. I don't even know how they could come up with such stupidity.
Well, obviously they're relying on the word of convict snitches to tell them what they want to hear, basically.
And the FBI agents are just totally liars, utter unbelievable liars.
Well, I mean, at this point, we've got to say, was any issue raised about the credibility of these witnesses, given that one of them was a convicted perjurer, and he's the one that's bringing these accusations against you?
Later on, a couple years later, when people, my wife really did the investigations and told Tom Bugle, and that's how it was brought out. Nobody else brought any of this out.
Dr. Tom, we're running out of time here. We're going to pick up your story again next week. Are you going to be available next week to come on?
I sure will, certainly.
All right, excellent. Well, this is a story that's got a lot of telling left in it. I mean, we haven't even scratched the surface of the incredible story of Dr. Tom Sell, a true American political prisoner. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us tonight. Thank you, Dr. Tom, for coming on. An absolutely astounding interview, and we're going to continue with it next week. This is Bill Rowland, standing in for James Edwards. You've been listening to The Political Cesspool. Happy landings, everybody.
Thanks for joining us tonight in the Political Cesspool. To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.